regulated militia being necessary for the security of a free state. You're right, and the people that keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad to be with you on the program today. If you were in the path of Hurricane Helene, I hope that you are getting ready and prepared, and hopefully, fingers crossed and knock on wood, that you make it through everything safe and sound this weekend. All right, on today's program, speaking of making it through something safe and sound, Kamala Harris made it through a sit-down interview with a major media outlet safe and sound, because there were really no hard questions asked of Kamala Harris when Stephanie Ruhle of MSNBC sat down with the current vice president and the Democratic candidate for president. Not a single question in 24 minutes about Kamala Harris's positions on, you know, gun control or the Second Amendment. No questions about what it means when Harris says she supports the Second Amendment. No mention of her proposal to buy back, quote unquote, the so-called assault weapons that she wants to ban. No mention of her comments in 2005 in support of a handgun ban in San Francisco. No mention of her support for D.C.'s handgun ban in 2007 when she was the district attorney in San Francisco and signed on to an amicus brief arguing that the Second Amendment doesn't protect an individual right to keep and bear arms. None of that came up during the big sit down. We did get one hard hitting question from Stephanie Ruhle, however, who asked Kamala Harris, your opponent almost every day seems to be talking about this. So I just want to ask you, yes or no, at any point in your life, have you served two all beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions on a sesame seed bun? And Harris did give that yes answer. And that was it. Yes. Didn't say when, where, how long she worked at McDonald's. Not that I really care. I don't. And I don't think most Americans do. Now, Stephanie Ruhle said, well, you know, Donald Trump keeps bringing this up, which, yeah, again, I don't really know why, except maybe to demonstrate that Kamala Harris loves to drop these sort of biographical details without providing many details, right? Same thing when she says, well, I'm a gun owner. What do we know about that? She says that she bought a gun back when she was the district attorney in San Francisco. Her campaign says that it's a pistol that's small enough to, you know, be concealed in a pocketbook, and that she keeps it securely stored in California. That's it. That's what we know. And that's really all the campaign wants to talk about. Fox News actually did ask some questions about this. They submitted several questions to the Harris campaign asking what type of firearm she owns. The last time she went to a range, that was one of the questions that I said the media should be asking Kamala Harris in a post at Bearing Arms earlier this week. But again, according to Fox News, the Harris campaign has not replied. They asked her on both Tuesday and Wednesday what type of gun she owns and what state the vice president registered her firearm and when was the last time she went to the range, but did not receive answers to those questions from campaign staffers. As Fox News reports, it's been more than 2 weeks since Harris first shocked social media users by claiming she owns a gun during the ABC News presidential debate in Philadelphia on September the 10th. Now, in 2019, Harris said the same thing, right? But she has not elaborated on that any more than she elaborated on any time she spent flipping burgers or maybe manning the drive-thru at McDonald's. In fact, she never even said what she did at McDonald's, which is not difficult. Listen, I can tell you, when I was 15, I worked at a bowling alley snack bar. About 6 months or so. That was my first real job, quote unquote. When I'm in college in the early 90s, I worked at Long John Silver's. Started out as a fry cook, but then quickly moved to the drive-thru. Apparently, they liked the sound of my voice better than they liked the taste of my fried fish and clam strips. For a brief period of time, I believe this was 1994, I worked at a Hardee's in Fort Smith, Arkansas, as a graveyard shift fry cook. That lasted about 2 weeks. It was a part-time job. My regular job at the time was an overnight stalker, S-T-O-C-K-E-R, not stalker, at a Kmart in Fort Smith, Arkansas, and was working on my days off from Kmart at Hardee's. That lasted about 3 weeks, and I decided, you know what, working the graveyard shift sucks enough that I don't need to be working 7 days a week. So I quit my part-time job at Hardee's. And that was the last time that I have worked in fast food. Okay, not that difficult to explain, say what you did when you did it. But this is part and parcel of Kamala Harris's campaign strategy, and the media is happy to go along with it and gaslight Americans when it comes to her views, not on working behind the counter at a fast food restaurant, but on your right to keep and bear arms, on my right to keep and bear arms, on our fundamental Second Amendment rights. It's, you know, listen, and I'll give an exemption to Fox News for asking those questions. New York Post, as far as I know, outside of Fox News, the only media outlet to cover Kamala Harris's 2005 support for a ban on handguns in San Francisco, a ban, by the way, that would have required existing owners to hand them over to the government. So she loves that idea, right? We've got two separate occasions where Kamala Harris has backed a gun ban that required existing owners to turn them in. Handguns in San Francisco in 2005, so-called assault weapons nationwide in 2019. And yet, what do we keep seeing from the media in terms of reporting on Harris's views about gun control? Most of it is like this recent piece by Asian Free Press. Harris surprises many with pro-gun stance. No. No. First of all, she didn't. I mean, saying you support the Second Amendment is not a pro-gun stance if your entire record stands in opposition to the right to keep and bear arms. This piece, which was, let me just make sure I've got the reporter's name correct here. Where is that? Ah, here it is. Sebastian Blanc is the editor at AFP who wrote this story. In this story, he says, Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump has repeatedly claimed that Harris would try to take away Americans' guns in violation of the Constitution's Second Amendment. The billionaire former president has been endorsed by the powerful gun lobby group, the National Rifle Association. And then the reporter says, Harris has not made any such threat. In line with most of her party, she only backs tightening of current laws. For example, requiring criminal and psychiatric background checks for all firearms purchases. Harris says she supports a ban on semi-automatic assault-style rifles, but no longer backs a mandatory buyback program. So first of all, when you support the, quote, tightening of existing laws, you are supporting new laws, right? You're not maintaining the status quo. You're saying, no, the current laws don't go far enough. We need more. The media can't even characterize Harris's support for things like a red flag law at the federal level, quote-unquote universal background checks, as new restrictions, even though that's exactly what they are. Oh, she just wants to tighten the existing rules. And then he came up with this whopper. Harris has the pro-controls voting bloc firmly in her camp already, which is true enough. The inroads that she needs to make are on the other side. Quoting a professor says that because the election is so close this year, all but a dead even heat, each party, each candidate trying to pull over a few more votes to each side, whichever possible. Harris, who back in 2019 told reporters that she kept a firearm for, quote, personal safety while working as a prosecutor, thinks she'll be on target. I'm a good marksman, she once boasted. All right, listen, if we're going to talk about, I'm sorry, not we, if the media is going to talk about Kamala Harris's comments about being a good marksman in 2019, why didn't the same reporter bring up her comments in 2022, just 2 years ago, when she said that the Bruin decision, which struck down the May issue carry laws in states like New York and California as a violation of our Second Amendment rights. She said that decision defied common sense in the Constitution. Why is AFP not mentioning that in their report? Why, again, if they're talking about Harris's boast of being a good marksman, are they not talking about her stated desire to ban handguns and to tell existing gun owners in San Francisco, you've got to hand them in? Why did they not mention her comment in 2007 in support of a gun storage ordinance in San Francisco, where she said it doesn't matter if you're a lawful gun owner behind locked doors, we can still come in and see that you're storing your guns properly, which would not only be a violation of our Second Amendment rights, but our Fourth Amendment rights as well. It's not like AFP can't find this information. It's not like the Associated Press can't find this information. It's not like Snopes or PolitiFact can't find this information. And yet all of the fact checks and the straight reporting, the supposedly straight reporting that we see, talking about Kamala Harris and guns, inevitably leaves out these crucial bits of information that tell us not just what Harris is saying on the campaign trail now, but what she has said and done in the past, when it comes to our right to keep and bear arms. You would think somebody who calls herself a Second Amendment supporter would be able to point to something that she's done that supports the Second Amendment. She can't. And the media is unwilling, not unable, unwilling to press her on this, choosing instead to ask her about her time at McDonald's or things like that, right? They are gaslighting voters when it comes to Kamala Harris's record. Now, I know some people might say, well, listen, it was 20 years ago, 2005, that was a long time ago. Look, you've got a movie coming out about Donald Trump in the 1980s and early 1990s, right? The Apprentice. So if Donald Trump's history from 40 years ago is somehow relevant to this year's election, then why is Kamala Harris's policies from 20 years ago, 15 years ago, 2 years ago, why is that supposedly a non-issue to the voters this year? There was a time, you know, I started in straight news. I actually started out behind the camera. Well, if you really want to get technical, I started out being the guy who sat in a dark room and pushed the button that made the commercials play at a TV station. But, you know, I worked in straight news as both a producer and a reporter. And I was proud of that. I was an investigative reporter for a few years. I was a storm chaser for a few years. We had to wear a lot of hats in mid-market radio in Oklahoma City. And I loved my job. I loved not only being able to tell the audience stuff that they didn't know before, which I thought was my primary job as a reporter, but I loved being able to question people, particularly those in positions of power, and to ask them questions that they might not want to have heard, but questions that deserved an answer. And we're not seeing that from our media. Not when it comes to Kamala Harris, not when it comes to the Second Amendment, not when it comes to our fundamental civil rights. It is a travesty. It is a dereliction of their duty. And frankly, it's not likely to change between now and November. Or, quite frankly, afterwards. So it is going to be up to us and outlets like Fox and the New York Post to get the word out about Kamala's past support for handgun bans, for bans on commonly owned, or her current support for bans on currently owned rifles, her repeatedly expressed desire to tell Americans who possess those guns she wants to prohibit that they have to turn them in. Right? We have to get the word out about this, because I don't think that I'd love to be proven wrong. I really, truly would love to be proven wrong about this. But I don't think that Kamala Harris is going to sit down with a reporter who's going to dare ask her those types of questions. And her campaign will just refuse to respond when outlets like Fox or The Reload or Bearing Arms try to get comment about the biographical details that she wants to mention, but only, again, on her terms. And never to explain what her positions are now, what support for the Second Amendment means to her, why she supposedly no longer supports the confiscation or the buyback or the turn-ins of the guns that she would like to ban, whether or not she believes that the federal government, as she apparently believed the local government in San Francisco did, has the authority or the power to enter the homes of lawful gun owners just to make sure that they're following all the laws, no evidence of any crime being committed or anything like that. Again, these are all reasonable questions. These are pertinent questions. And maybe another pertinent question we need to start asking is, why will the media not ask Kamala Harris about these things? All right, moving on to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. Let's start there with a case out of Portland, Oregon, where a Portland man accused of killing three people in random attacks had apparently violated the conditions of his early release on 30 occasions with essentially nothing to show for it. New lawsuit alleges that federal probation officers failed to supervise Joseph Kelly Banks, who violated the terms of his release, they say, at least 30 times before he was accused of fatally shooting three men and wounding four others in random attacks in 2022. The estate of one of the men killed, Mark Johnson, now suing the U.S. Probation Office charging them with negligence and wrongful death. The 55-year-old killed on the edge of Dawson Park in Portland back on March 1st, 2 years ago. According to Maxine Bernstein with the Oregonian, the spree of violence followed about 6 months of, quote, well-documented decompensation as Banks refused to take his psychiatric medications despite a violent criminal history when he was off his medicine. The group home where Banks was living repeatedly reported to his probation officer that he was skipping his meds multiple times a month, that shared concerns that he had become, quote, violent and unpredictable when off his medication. But the probation officer assigned to supervise Banks never reported the violations to a judge, according to the lawsuit, never set a hearing to address his violations, according to the lawsuit, and also, according to the litigation, never moved to consider whether or not he needed injectable medication instead of oral medication, never searched Banks' home to see if he possessed a gun, as one group home resident feared, although, again, it's not clear if there was evidence there. Attorney Josh Lamborn, who's representing Johnson's estate, says the group home staff were telling the probation officer for months and months and months of Banks' violations, and nothing was happening. If the required action were taken on any one of these violations, Banks would have been returned to court and likely would have been back in jail. Yeah. You know, again, this is not the first time that we've heard about individuals repeatedly violating the terms of their probation and then going on to commit more crimes. This is not, sounds like according to the lawsuit, the fault of the local criminal justice system in Portland, which certainly has its fair share, more than its fair share of issues, right? So this is a complaint, again, at the federal level. We'll keep our eyes open for any response on the part of the federal government. But again, you know, rather than try to fix these issues, and this happened during the Biden administration, right? This was 2 years ago. Rather than try to ensure that violent criminals actually face consequences for their actions, and that, again, those individuals who are in need of psychiatric treatment actually get the treatment that they're supposed to receive, Kamala Harris says it's your guns and your Second Amendment rights that are the problem that must be solved. Today's armed citizen story, Harris County, Texas, where the sheriff's office there says a homeowner shot and killed an alleged intruder. This was on Tuesday night, late Tuesday. According to authorities, the alleged intruder, identified as a 27-year-old, grabbed a shovel to break through a window of a home. When the homeowner grabbed a gun and shot the man multiple times, the suspect treated by first responders, taken to local hospital. Sheriff's office in Harris County says they believe the man was in the backyard of at least two or three other homes, but the man was on the front porch area of the home where he was shot. Authorities also said that the next door neighbor confronted the same suspect in their own backyard. That neighbor then told the homeowner, hey, listen, there was some guy in my backyard here. Be aware. And so apparently the homeowner who ended up shooting the would-be intruder was on guard. Sheriff's authorities also tell ABC News in Houston that the alleged intruder lives within a half mile of the home where he was shot, but they haven't said if he knew any of these individuals, haven't said if he was, you know, under the influence of any drugs or if he was suffering from any sort of mental episode. They say a grand jury will have to decide if charges will be filed, but no arrests were made. I am guessing that the grand jury is going to rule this a case of self-defense and the homeowner will not be facing any charges. But again, we'll keep you updated on any more additional information as it comes out. And finally today, our good deed of the day in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. An off-duty officer in Alabama who saved a man's life at a pickleball court in the town of Fairhope. I think this is the second pickleball-related saving that we have covered in the past couple of months. I think there was another one in Chesterfield, Virginia, not long ago, where a pickleball player collapsed on the court, and there were several individuals who were able to use the recently installed external defibrillators to revive this man. Very similar in Fairhope, Alabama. Steve Whitmer is a doctor there in Fairhope, but he was off duty. He was actually hanging out at the rec center when he said he saw a man collapse on the pickleball court. He said it was not the way the morning was planned, that's for sure. He rushed over, said he could not find a pulse, but the community center did also have an AED device, so he used that in the hopes of saving the man's life. He said within a minute of doing chest compressions after the shock and the heart came back into regular, within a minute of doing chest compressions after the shock in the heart came back into regular and strong rhythm. You could feel the pulse. He went on to say, if you can resuscitate the person within 3 to 5 minutes, they have a 50% chance of surviving. He said, as the minutes go on, because the brain's not getting blood and oxygen, the chances of survival dramatically decrease. But by the time paramedics arrived, again, the individual in question did have a heartbeat, did have a pulse, was breathing. According to WKRG, the man's friends say that he is still in the hospital after undergoing surgery, but his condition is stable, and his friends are hopeful that he is going to recover. Thanks again, in large part, to the quick thinking and fast actions of Stephen Whitmer, doctor there in Fairhope, Alabama, in the right place at the right time by the pickleball court at the rec center, and able to save a man's life even when he was not officially on duty. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. I'm looking forward to seeing you back here again on Monday, but be sure to check out BearingArms.com. Friday and across the weekend, we'll be updating the website with all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. Maybe, although I'm not holding my breath, maybe we'll actually see Kamala Harris get asked one of those legitimately difficult questions, or even one of those questions that shouldn't be difficult to answer about her views on gun ownership in the Second Amendment, but the questions that the media still refuses to ask the Democratic candidate. Again, I doubt we'll be seeing that, but I know that there is going to be a lot of news impacting your right to keep and bear arms. We'll have it all for you at BearingArms.com. If you're going to be at the Gun Rights Policy Conference in San Diego, California, please give a hug and say hi to all of my friends who will be there. I unfortunately am not able to be there in person this year. Missy's health was just so up in the air last month. I couldn't make any firm plans. It's been, knock on wood, about 4 weeks since she's had to be in the hospital. And I hope that we don't have to go back anytime soon, but still not exactly where we need to be. So my travel plans for the future are still very much up in the air. But I would love to be in San Diego this weekend in person. And I'm looking forward to checking out all of the activities online. Should be a fantastic weekend of Second Amendment activism. So again, to everybody who's going to be in San Francisco for GRPC, enjoy yourself. Have a great time. Hope you come back re-energized, refreshed, and ready to defend our right to keep and bear arms, not only in the build-up to Election Day, but in the aftermath as well. All right. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you back here soon. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.